Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Runner's World podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
And me, Ben Hobson.
Today we're speaking with Keely Hodgkinson about her training and her plans for the future. That's a proper athlete, Ben. I always get excited when we get a proper, like, high-profile athlete.
Got medals, Rick.
No offence to the other guests.
Yeah, all former guests. Sorry. Legitimate Olympic medals.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. It just feels like we've... with all these things, Rick, whenever we speak to someone who's actually an athlete... It just immediately questions my life choices.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking, like, what did your CV look like when you were 19? You know, what could you say of big achievements?
Getting, not failing everything miserably at school, yeah. I reckon was probably like
He passed his first year university exams. Yeah.
I'm surviving going abroad on my own.
Yeah.
That
was yeah,
probably
exactly.
like those that, sorts of things.
That was a dream, wasn't it? Yeah. He held down a paper round, that kind of thing. But yeah, you think Keely won an Olympic silver medal, age 19, in the 800 metres. So it's pretty impressive.
It was a hell of a race, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was great. It was great. It's an amazing distance, and hopefully she'll talk about this, but it's tactical, isn't it? It's like there's lots of ways to win the 800. It's not just, you can kind of David Rhodesia it and just be like, I'm faster than everyone and I'm just going to go off from the front, or you can be more tactical. But I think her maturity racing in that kind of, on the biggest stage was really like, part of what was so impressive about that silver medal, because I think you can get, it's a lot of elbows, mate, isn't it? There's a lot of elbows going on.
It's not a long time to sort of sort out what you're going to do in terms of a race. You've got to really sort of have your, there's your plan, and then there's adjusting to what everyone else wants to do.
Yeah,
and I think
exactly.
that's the sort of that mix of being like, all right, I'm going to do this in my race today, and then as you say, someone just goes off the front, and you'll be like, oh, well, let's change a plan. I better go with them and see what happens. So yeah. A great distance, and yeah, it's going to be great to have a chat with someone.
In just as exciting news, Ben, tell us about your own exercise schedule and your own running.
Just very similar, I imagine, to Keely. I've been really focusing on my threshold 800 meter tempos. No, I've just been casually doing some running, and I went for a big bike ride at the weekend and crashed, and so I hurt my leg, and that's about it. Not in a bad way, just in I can't run for a couple of days while my muscles hurt way.
Yeah.
And then we'll be back at it. But you've done some actual running, so why don't you tell everyone about that?
Yeah, my sort of return to something approaching fitness is happening. So I think I ran about 10 miles along the Waterlink Way, which is sort of southeast London, goes up to Deptford and it goes all the way down to kind of Beckenham, like near Croydon.
Give me some mileage.
I probably ran maybe 25 miles last week. So it's kind of getting back into, like, you know, some regular running. Yeah, start feeling like a runner again.
That's good. So did you enjoy this route? What was it like?
It's extremely flat, which is partly why I chose it, because there's not a lot of flat things near me. So you have to, like, follow in a river is probably about as good as it gets. It's kind of like, I guess you've got canal stuff near you, haven't you? So this is kind of my version of that.
Yeah, that's true. I do have that. But Epping's got some very sharp, short hills, but yeah, there's nothing too arduous around here. It's all pretty level. Yeah, the flats of Essex await. That's about it.
Guest of the week here in the studio. Guest of the week sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete, could be a physio, or a complete unknown.
Our guest today exploded onto the scene when she won a silver medal in 800 metres at the Tokyo Olympics. In the process, she beat Kelly Holmes' British record for a distance, and she did all this aged 19. Here to tell us more about her training and her goals for the future, Keely Hodgkinson. Keely, how did you first get into running?
So I used to be a swimmer, and I swam a stupid amount of times a week when I was like 10 or 11. I think they call it like the scheme swimming or something. But it gave me really good fitness, and I did a school cross country for my school. But it's quite funny because the first year of the cross country, I actually didn't get picked because, well, I should have done because I actually lapped people, but they thought I was at the back. And then I remember going home to my mum and being like, "Mum, I swear. I like won that. I should have done that team." But my mum's not really the type to like go in and start shouting at teachers. So I didn't get picked. The next year I did, and I ended up, I was winning all the way up until, these had like a follow the leader back then.
Right.
Like you'd follow, because I was only like 9. And at the end, this guy like ducked under the tape, and I followed him under, thinking that that was the end. Right. Then you had to carry on going. So the girl who was behind me like went through and won. So I literally lost in the last 2 years. But then after that, I went and joined the local athletics club, and yeah, the rest is history.
That's amazing. I love the idea of getting the cross-country team. We talked with Elliot Giles a while back, and he said he got turned away by his first athletic club as well. It's just amazing. Yeah, they're like, "Nah, not you, mate.
How do you turn you away?"
Yeah, not no. Oh, I don't see any hope in that person. Yeah, that's,
you've got
not,
no potential. Yeah.
Did you have any sort of running heroes when you were growing up? Did you just get into running because it was something that was happening, or did you sort of see people on the TV and you thought, "Ah, that's something I want to do"?
No, it was sort of something that was happening, and then as I was getting into athletics, that's when we started watching it. But Jessica Ennis was definitely a big inspiration growing up. She did hit me once to be a heptathlete, but it just never really happened, unfortunately. But yeah, I did Jessica Ennis, and then obviously I've heard a lot about Kelly Holmes, but I was like 2 when that was going on, so that's not so much. But I enjoy watching athletics. I think, you know, it's nice to see what goes on, some really inspiring figures around.
So you remember then, like, was London 2012 something that's like an early, like, a memory for you that was kind of, you were actually inspired a little bit by seeing someone like Jess Ennis there?
Yeah, so I quit athletics when I was around 10 or 11, and that's when I always be a swimmer. Me and my dad used to have these arguments because he would say I was a much better runner, and then I'd take that as like, "Oh, so you think I'm really bad at swimming then?"
Right.
And we'd have the constant back and forth, and then eventually I quit the swimming, and it was watching London. And I was about 10 in London 2012, watching that was made me go back to athletics that summer, and like seeing, you know, her like being the face of London, and like everything that went on, her winning goal was just amazing even back then. So yeah.
And then we fast forward to Tokyo. And you're stepping up, you know, and you're at the start line for this race, and there's a medal potential. What are your memories of that day and the race and how it all panned out?
Right, it feels so long ago, you know. It was like 8-9 months ago now, but I think that day was just kind of, I just kind of like woke up and was like, right, I'm in the final. Like, that was the big thing, getting to the final. I remember watching the semis. And like the semis is always like, I think it's so cutthroat, like going from 24 people to 8, that's so hard. But obviously I don't want to do 4 rounds, that's just too much. Yeah, I remember watching the semis, I remember seeing, I think I was the last one, and I remember seeing Alex Bell's heat before mine, and I'm looking at him being like, "Oh shit, I'm going to have to run quicker because they ran really quick." And yeah, I was like, "Oh no, there's no fastest loser spots now." Like, so once I crossed the line, and then the way I ran the semi was a bit, that's not what we talked about. So, you know, even just getting through was a bit like, "Oh, thank God for that." But yeah, once I was in it, I was so relaxed. Like, to me, it was just like going out and executing. I knew what shape I was in. I knew what I could do. It was just like, yeah, not getting carried away and just focusing for 2 minutes. And then, yeah. It all came together.
We were chatting, me and Rick, about this in terms of the tactics of the 800 and how, like, you can have what you set out as your plan and then how you adjust accordingly to the other races and what they're doing. How do you cope with that as a sort of thing? If, you know, if someone goes from the gun and just wants to absolutely smash it for the you know, off the first lap, is there a sort of, do you have these contingencies built in, or do you just have to hold on and see what happens?
I guess I think you can kind of like, so before the final, we obviously spoke about like plan A, plan B, plan C, plan D, plan E, of everything that people could do. And obviously people have got their strengths and weaknesses. So we kind of predicted how the race would go. And that is how it ended up panning out. I kind of thought Finn would take it on, because that's, you know, she seemed like quite the front runner, and quite strong like that. But you literally can't, I think the 800 starts at 300 meters to go. You just jog around for a bit and then then it it literally does know, because whoever's in the front of the 300 is very rarely at the front at the end. Depends how the race is, obviously, but you know, then there's short, like slow races, fast races. Because Tokyo, the first lap, like for an Olympic final, was actually quite slow. It was 57.9, and I went through in 58.4, but it ended up being a 1:55 race, which is absolutely crazy. So I'm not quite sure what happened.
Yeah, it's well, we were saying that it's like I feel like you've got to hold your nerve with those kind of middle distance races where, and there's a lot of elbows going on, and like just actually sort of holding your nerve and believing that actually you've paced it right must be part of you know, the challenge. As far as what a training week looks like for you now, what's it made up of, and what's the kind of mix of track work and longer, slower stuff as well?
So a lot of people find my training quite weird because I don't really do like slow stuff. I don't really, like long runs is not really a thing in my training plan. They are in the summer but that's when the track sessions get more intense. So obviously you need the slow recovery days then. But in winter it would be like, I do a lot of cross training to just try and keep off my feet, because too much time on my feet, I end up getting like those stress responses and stuff. So I do cross training on Mondays. Tuesdays I'll like double with the cross trainer, and then I'll do like a track session. Wednesdays is the only time I do a run. It'll be a 30-minute run and then a 40-minute cross trainer with some gym. Thursday is the same as Tuesday, but maybe more of a tempo type session. Friday, I always have Fridays off. Saturdays will either be in the winter, like a longer session. In the summer, it'll be a track session. And then Sundays in the winter will be hills. And in the summer season, so I'm done doing sessions on Sundays now. I can just do a run.
Wow. So loads of quality, but not too many miles, yeah.
Yeah, I almost train like a sprinter, I'd say.
Yeah.
But I think the 800 is getting towards that. I think there's a whole new, like not science, maybe science is the right word, but like perspective of 800 training being you actually need the speed. Like it's not always about doing miles. But then it depends what kind of 800 runner you are. Because if you're a 1500, 800 runner, you're going to run it a lot differently to how a 400, 800 runner is going to run it. So it's sort of very technical, very interesting, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Especially when you talk about how much cross training you're doing and gym stuff you're doing there. That's like sprinting kind of like world of, like, you know, I mean, yeah, lifting stuff for power and all those sorts of things. It's
yeah, do you remember Elliot Giles talking about it, Ben? He said he ran 15 miles a week.
Yeah.
And loads of stuff was on the elliptical.
Oh, his is so interesting.
It's so interesting, yeah, yeah.
Elliot's training, and I've spoken to him before, I just don't understand it. Because I think he's quite prone to, like, calf injuries and stuff, so he literally barely runs. And I'm like, this is crazy. How do you do that?
We had Sophie Powers on, who's an ultra runner, and she was doing at one point most of 35 miles a week and just going to the gym, and she was running 100 mile races.
Oh my god,
yeah, lots of different ways to come up, aren't there? Yeah.
Exactly. So this sort of high mileage stuff that sort of people kind of stick to, maybe, you know, it's
do you even count mileage, Keely? Would you even be like oh, I know what miles I'm running a week, or is it because it's not really about longer runs, you just like, who cares?
I'll know, like my watch will tell me, because I keep it on the watch. Yeah. But I don't really like, I don't even know if Trevor might count them and know, like, yeah. I don't really know. You might know, like, oh, this winter you're going to hit. Like, so this winter we tried to go with around 35 for the winter. Some weeks would have been like 28, some weeks would have been 36. Like, it just varies, depends. But around like, probably like a 32 on average. Through winter, but other than that, I don't really count it now. I just like to know my recoveries during reps. That's it.
Do you have a session that always tells you when you're getting close to race fit? Is there one bit session that you kind of lean on to get that top end performance stuff going?
Yeah, so the session we do, which is like the last kind of session I'll do before champs, and it's a split 800, 400, 30 seconds, 400. So you basically just win an 800, but it's very accurate. The outcome. So I remember in Tokyo, I did that session, it was my session before the champs, and I think I split a 1:55.3 and then ended up with 1:55.8. So when you run that well, you kind of like, okay, the kind of the honest reflection of where you're at. So that one, I'd say.
When you're racing, as far as nutrition, what would be your sort of pre-race breakfast, let's say, if before you were sort of trying to run well?
Porridge. Have porridge. I feel like this question is like everyone has the same answer. But
yeah. Every so just say something porridge. Mad like caviar.
I mean, I have porridge. I always have a cup of tea. Absolutely love them. And then probably literally white bread, white toast. Has to be white. In my head, it has to be white.
There's I can't remember the name of the athlete I interviewed. He was running Tokyo Marathon, and he wasn't sure. He didn't. He would normally travel with food, and he didn't. And he had just plain white rice with jam on it. That was his pre-race food. Have you ever had to, when traveling around, have you ever had to deviate and adapt to some strange? Or do you always have a bit of like a quick pot in the suitcase?
I usually don't. To be fair, I'm the athlete that doesn't have the spare snacks. I'll be taking everyone else's. But no, usually we're in Tokyo though, wasn't it? So it would have been very different options. Usually there'd be some granola somewhere lying around that I could have, but no. I know people that do that though, as an actual thing. I think Asana Meslek, as you know, he runs for Italy, but his pre-race is literally just plain rice with milk.
There you go.
That's it.
It's
a thing
we get asked so many times, like, oh, what should I have this with this? And it's like, if I put some banana with it, is it going to do it? And it's like, well, look at the elites, they just want plain rice. some jam.
Are you very, very strict with your diet, Keely, or do you allow yourself like the odd indulgence?
So I eat pretty well. I'm not really a person that like craves takeout or craves the Mackies or things like that, because they just don't really feel very good. But so I'd like rather have, like, some of my friends would be like, oh, can I get a Chinese? And I'm like, I'd rather eat a chocolate bar, to be honest. That'd be like thing. So I eat pretty well, like, not out of like, oh, I have to, just because I like to. And, you know, like, I do eat a lot of fruit and veg and things like that and carbs and stuff. But there'll always be a chocolate bar there a day.
You've sort of got a duo training set up with Trevor Painter and Jenny Meadows. Is it nice to have the two sort of influences and the two inputs when it comes to building? Do you train with one more than the other, or is it just sort of like a good cop, bad cop situation?
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello? Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So Trevor is the coach, that he sets everything. And Jenny, to start with, I'd say she's really good to have, because obviously she's been there, she's done it. There's still people I'm racing that she was racing. Obviously, they were at the beginning of their career, now they're at the end. So it is really interesting. And there's also stuff like, she'll be like, oh, she'll see a session, she'll be like, oh, I know what shape you're in, because she's done it and she knows what it feels like. So just having that extra input is really good. But I think, she'll sometimes be like, oh, maybe don't do this, Trevor, because when I did it, I felt like this, and that little improvements like that. So I suppose I am getting there, like, if they've made any mistakes or they could learn from anything, I'll get the right way, because they've already done it, which is quite good. But we just have a lot of fun, to be honest. They are like second parents to me. And they've got a little girl now, Arabella, who comes everywhere with me. training camp. So yeah, we have a lot of fun. I think that's part of why it works so well.
That's nice, because I feel like that's not part of a training schedule that you imagine has a role in kind of like elite athlete life, the idea that actually training should be fun. Is that, do you feel like that actually is a kind of key component to what makes it so successful?
Yeah, definitely. Like, our training groups definitely follow some characters that just keep it lighthearted and keep it a lot of fun. And Trevor's like a big dad joker anyway, so he's always trying to crack out some jokes. But yeah, I think that's his philosophy is like, a happy athlete is a fast athlete. So one priority would be making sure I'm happy off the track, because then when I come to the track, it's not extra stress. It shouldn't be an extra chore. It should be something I want to do and something I enjoy. So that's kind of the key thing we go for.
Do you ever take yourself off for a run just for the sake of it? I mean, you probably don't have that ability in the week in terms of time, and you don't want to expend extra energy. But, you know, the majority of our listeners will be recreational, seeking running for sort of pleasure people. Is that something that falls into your life? Is it allowed to happen that way? No.
If anything, I'll find a reason to sit on the couch.
Yeah. Oh no, we all do that. That's fine. Yeah.
No, and I think, suppose maybe sometimes in like off season or when I'm going in between races, I actually quite enjoy a nice little run. You know, when you feel like you're not doing anything. So then I'm like, oh, I quite enjoy a run, but and you do feel better afterwards. But no, there's no extra.
I'm just going to pop off for a little 5k on my own here.
Just a little park run. You have experienced some injuries in your career, I think sort of knees and shins and that stuff. What lessons have you learned, do you think, or advice do you have for avoiding injury? And how have you learned to kind of cope with it psychologically? Because I know kind of coming back can be a challenge as well.
I think psychologically, I don't think you can ever really be prepared for injury, especially if things are going so well. So like obviously I tore my quad second time. In March, just before the World Indoors. But literally, if the champs had been a week before that, I would have got through it. That's when I did my 400 session. I was like, yeah, I'm ready to go. And then literally a week later, it was just too much. But I had been struggling with it for like 2-3 weeks up to that, which was a bit mentally. It's more just mentally draining me trying to get ready for the champs. As people I wanted to interview, ask questions, and I'm going to the track. I don't even know if I was going to get through the session, in all honesty, because it was like, some days were really good and other days it was like, they're a bit sore. But I think the lesson learned from injuries is just, I think it teaches you resilience and determination. Because even when you're injured, there's still a lot of things that you can do to keep fit. Like Trevor's really good at making sure when I get injured, I tend to come back in the same shape or sometimes stronger, and just because I've worked so hard on the bike and rehab and things like that. But it definitely is testing, because everything is easier when training's going well.
After the Olympics and the sort of like media hype drops away and the sort of things like that, did you hear any nice stories from, you know, you were inspired by watching Jess Ennis, and did you hear from sort of like young female athletes who would get in touch and be like, actually I saw you racing and now I want to do it? How important is that to you in terms of inspiring new generations of runners?
There was a few stories, I can't really remember some now, but I remember like some, I get some letters sometimes off some younger girls that like, and to me, I don't think of myself as that. So it's a bit of a weird role reverse, but it's really nice, you know, to know other people look up to, because, you know, the sport, it's not an easy sport. And I think, you know, it's we can give a lot in the sport, but keeping people in it is the hardest part, I think.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, I think it's just nice to know that people are looking at and watching, really, because obviously I work really hard to do what I do, and to people that enjoy watching it, it's just a nice feeling, I think.
There's been a lot of chat about running shoes on the road and on the track. What's it like running in the Nike Dragonfly spikes? Because they are seemingly giving, I'm not going to say an advantage, but actually people are getting quicker and they seem to be having an effect. Yeah.
Yeah. The Dragonflies are very comfy. I use them as like a splat type shoe. I have raced in them. I raced in them all last year, but I'm actually thinking I'm going to switch to the Maxfly now, okay. Which is interesting. But yeah, Dragonflies, I didn't even realize they weren't carbon plated. I thought they were. Everyone was telling me they were, and then Nike were like, no, they're not. They're just, the Victories are carbon plate and the Maxfly's are carbon plate, but the Dragonflies are just the X foam.
Okay.
But they are very comfy, and they're very, I don't know, in terms of, people have said that they're supposed to help with like calf fatigue,
Okay.
I don't know what they do in terms of that, but yeah, I think you can tell on the track, obviously, people are getting quicker, and whether that's to do all to do with shoes, I'm not sure, because it's probably worth maybe like 0.5%, 1%, but yeah, at elite level, yeah, it's a lot, I suppose. You could take that into factor. But, you know, I think we're moving with the times, so, and I think it's good to see like 30-year-old world records be taken down, and if it's technology that's doing it, it's good to see. So I think it's quite good. They're quite comfy. I like them.
What would be the difference of the Max Fly then? Is that a carbon plate, isn't it?
It has got a carbon plate, but that's a sprint spike.
Okay.
Which confuses me, because you'll see people in the 100 wearing them, and then you'll see them in the 800 wearing them.
Yeah,
and it doesn't really quite make sense. But I just like the upper material of the Max Fly, and they're not as bouncy as the Dragonfly, because the Dragonfly is more spongy and it's a bit more cushioning. But I think my guess is the carbon plate, maybe the reaction of the foot is a bit more, like you get more out of it maybe because of the carbon plate.
Do you have any sort of like, apart from race shoes, do you have like a whole... We speak to people and they're just like, they have this for this shoe for this session, this shoe for this session, this shoe for this. Do you tend to, because your distance is so set, do you just train in the shoes that you race in, or do you have a way of just building up to things?
I know I'm quite boring when it comes to this question. I literally just use Pegasus. I run in the peg, because I know people tempo in like the next percent. So like there's the new streaks out now, I think. But for me, I don't always want the carbon plate advantage. I'd rather like, it's almost like when you warm up in trainers and you put your spikes on and you feel really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, I want to do all the dirty work and just the normal stuff. And then when it comes to racing, I'll put on a pair of spikes and I feel absolutely great. It's probably a psychological thing, but yeah, I literally just run in the Pegasus and then on the track, depending on the session, I'll vary between Dragonfly and Maxfly.
Yeah, exactly. You want an extra gear, don't you, on the actual day?
So summer ambitions, as the sort of weather is getting better, in terms of World Champs and Commonwealth Games, what's the aim?
Well, originally I was going to do obviously the World Indoors, the World and the Commonwealth, and the Europeans as a question mark. But I think with having missed the World, I want to try and do all three. I think that'd be quite good fun and quite a challenge. But number one priorities are the World and Commonwealth, and I'd like an upgrade from an Olympic silver to a world gold, but that is not going to be easy to do at all, but we're going to try. And then the Commonwealth, we'll just see what we've got left.
See how tired, tired you are.
Yeah, literally.
You're also really good over 400. Is there, like, do you have long-term ambitions to sort of double up? It would be obviously a different double to Kelly Holmes, but do you have any ambitions over 400, or is it more just kind of keeping your eye in with the kind of really sprinty stuff?
It is like keeping my eye in. Like, my aim at the minute of the next like couple of years is to make myself faster. I don't really know how fast that's going to be. I feel like for me to double in the 400, I've got to be running at least 49.50. Otherwise, there's not really a point. It's not going to get me anywhere. But definitely, I'd love to make a relay team one day and run in that. I think that'd be really cool. But I reckon if I was to ever double, it probably would be 15. People tell me I should be 15 runner, which I find very insulting. But yeah, it probably is that. But the 400, I just have a lot of fun with, and it's nice to just like mix it up a little bit.
We know that Nike's celebrating its 50th anniversary this year. And obviously, as a brand, it's been behind a lot of pioneering developments in running, including shoes. But what do you think is some of the biggest change that's happened in your career? And where do you think athletics might go in the future?
Changes would be probably definitely technology-wise, like with the shoes, and also the what's it called, the pacing on the track. That's very new. They try to use it for 100, but it doesn't really work.
Okay, yeah.
Because it only works on the first lap. Oh, no, it doesn't work on the first lap. It just works, but then it ends up, because it's set for like a certain, and no one can keep up with it. But I think, that's interesting. And then I know a lot of people have a lot of opinions on that. I've seen on Twitter of like, it shouldn't be allowed or et cetera, et cetera. But I think it kind of depends on what you're using it for. I think it's quite good because, if you've got something in front of you, it's the same as a pacemaker really, isn't it? So I'd say that's the only thing that I think's really changed. I think where it might go is I hope people will just get faster. And I think there's a lot of... a lot more information now, maybe like even nutrition and like how science can just, even with recovery, which can literally, what I'm seeing is adding years onto people's career, especially with, and I think there's also a really good new like stereotype for like women coming back from pregnancies, which I think is amazing, because definitely when I was younger, I'm saying younger, like I'm not having kids anytime soon, I'm only 20. But I definitely used to think like, oh no, that's something you got to do after your career. Like I've got to be like 35. When in hindsight, I don't. If I want to have kids at 26, I can. And watching people like Alison Felix, like Shelley Ann Fraser come back and still at the absolute top of their game is like amazing. And I think it's going to create a whole new line of like, no, it's pretty normal to do that. You know, you shouldn't be able to be and live like be a woman, want to have kids and come back and still have a career.
What about, I mean, we always talk about, this is another tech question, but we always talk about the shoes being the thing that changes a lot. But what about like the apparel and the race kit that you guys use? Have you sort of even just in your career noticed that that's got better and has helped with, or is it just kind of, you get issued your standard set of like shorts and vest and away you go?
You know what, there might be a science behind the kit, because the material has changed. Like since, yeah. If you look at like the 2018 kit, now we've got like a Aeroswift kit, I think it's called. Yeah. With like the, it's like a ribbed like line. Whether that does anything, I have no idea. But it looks cool.
Yeah.
Like it looks really nice. So you know they say feel good, run fast. So maybe it's that.
There's always been when they did the Breaking 2 stuff and they were sort of all putting like stripes of tape on their shins with little spikes on it because they were like disrupting the air while they were running. And there's all this sort of science. Yeah, there's all of this aerodynamics. Oh, I guess because 20, you know, as fast as you can for 40Ks. Yeah. That sort of where his wind resistance kind of comes into it. But, you know, I kind of always think that there's within the fast stuff, there's got to be a sort of a, someone's going to come through with a sort of like little suit on or something that kind of like, you know, breaks shatters a record because you've, you know, you're slippery through the air or something like that. I don't know. We'll see what happens.
I like that, Ben. I feel like you could design that, Ben.
Yeah, I'll use all my knowledge, all my engineering whiz and just come up with something. Yeah.
Keely, thanks so much for coming on the Runner's World podcast and giving us your time. Great to speak to you about how you got into running and your ambitions for this year and beyond. So thank you very much. And yeah, I hope to get you back on at some point.
And then thank you very much for having me. I've enjoyed it.
So yeah, great chat with Keely there. Interesting that she was a swimmer, mate, before being a runner.
Interesting that she quit athletics at the age of 10 and then just took, and then 2012 inspired her to start again.
Yeah,
another success for London 2012. Well done, London 2012.
Yeah, great. I mean, it was a big part of London 2012 as well, wasn't it? Like, this is going to inspire the next generation, actually. Yeah. When you hear from people like Keely, who maybe, yeah, like you say, wouldn't have come to the sport, those kind of Super Saturday actually has inspired, in her case, the next generation of brilliant runners. So, fair play. Also, got a nice swimming pool out of it over in East London as well. So that's good.
Yeah, that is good.
West Ham got a football ground, so...
I'm indifferent to that. I'm indifferent to that.
Swings around. No, and again, Ben, like in some ways, I'm like 800 metres, probably going to be training in excess of 50 miles a week at elite level.
Yep.
But no, more like 32 set on average. And like loads of quality in there. It was like kind of 4 days, wasn't it? Of like,
you know, and cross training, like, and as Keely says, like a bit more sprint orientated in the amount of sort of stuff that she's doing. So,
yeah.
Yeah, another elite focusing on quality, not quantity.
Yeah,
guys, pay attention.
It would be interesting, wouldn't it, if she has to go and do 1500 meters? Because it seems that she's being advised that she's actually, you're not a 400 meter runner, you're a 1500 meter runner. I would imagine that your training would have to change to be slightly more mileage based at that level. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows? We'll see. But I mean, yeah, good luck to her for. Champs and world champs and Commonwealths, because I think, you know, there's definitely some hopes pinned on her.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, for sure. I mean it's interesting that she mentioned Jess Ennis, because in some ways, you know, she's become a bit of a sort of poster woman for British athletics, and only being 20, you think the best years are probably to come with her running. She's already the British record holder indoors and out over 800, so it's like, wow, like sky's the limit for her. And actually, yeah, like world gold, Olympic gold is actually something that's, you know, like a really realistic ambition. So that's always exciting, isn't it? Because track and field is so competitive, you know, to actually have a Brit who could potentially win a gold is amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, it's massive. It should be, we will watch with fingers crossed.
Exactly.
All that sort of stuff. Yeah.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. Huge thanks to our guest, Keely Hodgkinson, and to you, of course, for listening.
Please subscribe to this podcast if you haven't already, but thank you for listening regardless. And subscribe to Runner's World magazine. Go to the internet and search Runner's World UK subscription, and that'll sort that out. And then visit runnersworld.com/UK for all of your internet-based running needs. And that is all the three things that you need to do right now. Thanks. Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue checkmark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.